Okay, here we go. Cardiac lecture. Give me a second to get the PowerPoint up. Yay, GarageBand is working. Let's load the lecture. We should be okay. Hopefully, so far so good. Like, operating system, like, just stopped. Okay, we're not gonna change it. Don't freak out, please. Okay. So, you know that what we're doing this semester is linking all these organs, right? We're thinking about the body in a more holistic manner, how disease states affect different organisms and different outcomes in different organs, and how they manifest, right? That's kind of the overall umbrella of what we're doing in this semester. So now let's step back from that and look at the heart. So the heart has an essential job in the body, right? What does it do? Pump blood, right. And what's so important about pumping blood? Right, oxygenizes the entire body and with nutrients and everything else that all the organs in the body need. But now we're going to look at what happens when the heart itself has difficulty, when the vessels specifically in the heart are diseased. What's that going to look like to the rest of the body? You're going to see the ramifications of that, right? Because the heart is so very important. Correct? So when the heart is diseased, it's huge. It has all sorts of, causes all sorts of problems throughout the body that you see. So this is the one time where we're really going to kind of take the heart and look at it. Generally, instead of that little knowledge check, I give a quiz on coronary circulation. So I ask you the parts of the heart, or I ask you the way blood flows to the heart. Usually people fall flat on their faces and don't do very well. So since, you know, you guys weren't too jazzed about your quiz, most of you, your test scores, I didn't want to lay that on top of you today. But please know basically how the blood runs through the heart, okay? Don't make me give you one of those horrible quizzes that everybody fails, all right? Instead, you got your little 2 points that I hope you got right. So know a little about this. Coronary circulation. Let's see. And you're right. Coronary heart disease is generally due to atherosclerosis. You're correct. And that's the occlusion of those arteries, right? Occlusion of the arteries, which means closing, right? Or the lumen is getting small. Less patent. Those are all words that mean it's kind of closing off, all right? So, obviously, if the vessel is somewhat occluded, what's that going to do to the blood supply of the body? Decreasing. So, coronary heart disease, coronary vascular disease, particularly, has a huge impact on the rest of the body. So, what's atherosclerosis? What is it? Yeah. Primarily, the underlying process in coronary heart disease. Impaired perfusion of the myocardial tissue. So, yes, the blood is moving through the heart, but also the heart itself is not getting the nutrients and oxygen it needs to perform correctly. So we've got two things going on. We've got the blood flow through the heart, which isn't moving efficiently through the rest of the body, right? And we've also got the heart itself as a muscle, an organ unto itself, that's not well oxygenated because of the vascular problems. Correct? So two main concerns there. All right? And these are the arteries involved. When arteries become... clogged, when there's a problem with them, when they're threatened,
The heart does something wonderful, and actually you'll see this in other parts of the body too. We develop what's called collateral circulation, or collateral channels. Okay? So the small arteries take the workload off the big one that's not working efficiently. That's why someone can have 90% coronary obstruction and be asymptomatic. Pretty amazing, huh? Someone will come in for a CABG, coronary bypass, right? Bypass surgery, graft surgery. And they'll pick out some arteries that are like 90% occluded. You're thinking, how is this person been divided? Due to collateral circulation. And the rest of the body does this too, but it's most obvious in the heart. Little vessels take over the work so that the heart can still continue to do its job for a time until it gets too bad. And this is another wonderful compensatory mechanism that the body has.
So now that often people develop an alternative blood flow, alternative routes. Remember cardiac cells, right? Remember that from patho? No, I guess it was probably not patho, probably your basic physio, right? They're pretty cool, aren't they? They're different from other cells, right? They can do all these things. But in order for the heart to be, what does it mean? What? Yeah, potassium too. Right. But what else? Somebody thinks of it. Right, an electrical impulse. This is the one place in the body where you have an electrical impulse coming through. Okay. So without the electrical impulse, are you going to get a heartbeat?
So it must have, be able to conduct, right? It must be able to contract. It must be able to refract, meaning relax, go back. It must be able to have excitability, which means receive the electrode, right? And it has to work with the brain and the autonomic nervous system, correct? All that's got to go on. It's got to be able to receive that impulse.
Because if any of those factors are missing, you're not going to get a heartbeat. Has some of you felt odd heartbeats when people listen to them, or what did you think?
In Jiri on Monday, my patient, it felt like he had aphid.
Yeah.
But what happened is, like, it'd be pretty good, and then it'd go, doo-doo-doo-doo.
Oh, a fast way.
But then it'd go, doo-doo. And then it'd go, doo-doo-doo. Like, it would just
erratic.
Kind of apical, and it would think that.
Right. And like in San Jose, we had this huge obese woman, and we couldn't listen to her heart at all. But you could still feel it. You could feel her irregular heartbeat in a radial pulse. It was very cool. She'd go, da, 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 da. I mean, it was, so you get these. Yeah.
My patient is intubated. Like, she had a heart rate, but she had no pulse anywhere. Femoral, fetal, cranial.
Really? Nothing. So what's going on there?
I don't know. Like, why did that?
Was she, maybe her vessels were just so deep.
She was obese, she was like a stab in her, but even radial, she had no pulse.
While we're talking about, you brought up the concept of arterial blood gases, what were you looking for? And what is an arterial blood gas? We saw one drawn in San Rosa last weekend too.
The oxygen coming out.
Yeah, we're looking for
it. She was asked about it.
You learned a little bit about this in Patha, remember?
She had low carbon dioxide.
Right, it wasn't. She didn't have the ability to compensate.
So we did the two IV pushers of bipartisan. Yeah. But it was really weird to see. I couldn't
figure it out.
I don't know if it's cool.
So, yes, that's my point. Why do we take the arterial blood gases? And you just answered the question. Good. I'm not going to ask anything about arterial blood gases. You'll get more of it next semester. You have a little introduction in patho. Okay. So no, the heart has to have all these properties in order to work correctly, right? It's got to be able to accept that electronic stimuli It's got to work with the autonomic nervous system. It's got a pulse. We have some coronary heart disease, don't we? These are the kind of things we're going to talk about today. 13.2 million people. This is pretty accurate. This is 2011, so it's probably pretty right. People generally die from cancer or heart disease, if they don't die from accident or something weird. Those are the two biggest killers in the U.S. As you know, how many times is some kind of heart disease a secondary diagnosis with your patients? Many times, right? Many times. So it's well worth giving a little attention to. We can give some drug therapy to prevent some of these atherosclerotic lesions, plaques, occlusions from growing. It all has to do with what cholesterol levels in the blood. The word hyperlipidemia. Okay? Heard that? Read it? Too many lipids in the blood. High cholesterol. Hyperlipidemia. So what do we give? What kind of meds have you seen to treat hyperlipidemia? I know you've all written it on your med sheets by now. Lipitor. Excellent. Which is what? What's Lipitor? Yeah, I don't know either. Reducing blood cholesterol, right. I don't know the pharmacokinetics. It's a statin. Yeah, we're going to reduce the fat in the blood, right? We're going to encourage people to eat a less fat diet, healthier diet, more exercise, right? So we don't build up the plaques. I went to an interesting lecture once by a cardiologist who said that generally what happens is that how you get these occlusive areas, you know, you get general plaque buildup, but when there comes a real problem, it's usually like one spot. You get it in a bifurcation when vessels bifurcate. You get it when there's been a little irritation or a little rough spot on the side, a small injury on the side of the artery. That's where they tend to accumulate. Okay, so then they accumulate and get to a point where it's completely obstructed. So rather than just all the vessels getting smaller, it's generally one area that tends to kind of come out, and it's an atherosclerotic lesion is what they're called, and cause the occlusion. And there are four different classes of cholesterol-lowering drugs, and you'll learn more about that as you move through and experience them all. Lipitor is a good example. So atherosclerosis, as we talked about, results in blood flow obstruction, weakened arterial walls, and it's a major cause of aneurysms. Remember what an aneurysm is from your... What's an aneurysm? Yeah, no, not a clot. That's a clot. Or a, yeah, it's... let me see if I can draw one. There are several different kinds of aneurysms. Did you learn about it in patho? Different kinds? A fusiform and a berry, and you'll see different kinds of aneurysms. But basically, okay, we got that. And then it's converse, right? And this is weakened tissue, obviously. Okay. So atherosclerosis is a major cause of aneurysm, which makes all sorts of sense. If you got a whole bunch of plaque building up pressure here, chances are it's going to put pressure that way too. Weaken the vessel, and then it doesn't break through, blood can go out. I've actually had the experience of hearing an abdominal aneurysm that ruptured. You know, you have this huge artery that's going down the center of your body, right? The aortic artery. So you can... This guy, don't forget it. I was working an evening shift. It was like 7 o'clock. He's this old farmer. He comes in. I'm doing my assessment, you know, and I'm listening to abdominal sounds. I hear this, shh. I go, what? I had no idea what it was. I'm getting all nervous. So then the surgeon walks in, who happens to be my co-coach on our son's soccer team. I'm going, and he knew I was a nurse, so I thought, you know, I could say, what is that? You know, and I was like, what is that? He goes, oh, no, we're taking him to surgery, like, right now. That's why I'm here. He has a ruptured aneurysm. Whoa, really? Can you listen again? So the point of that story is you don't need to know what you're hearing. You just need to know that's really weird and something is very wrong here. So if that man had come in undiagnosed, I still would have called and said something is really weird. So when you hear very odd things, so be secure in your assessment. You're learning what normal is. When you hear something that's completely off the wall, like a shh, when you're expecting a bowel sound, and what was that? That was the blood rushing out into his peritoneum, right? Okay, so he was going immediately to surgery. Most people die from this. They generally don't live. Sometimes aneurysms are slow little leaks, like brain aneurysms. Sometimes people have them for years. Or sometimes they have them for years, don't even know they have them until they rupture. Often death is very quick because it's huge. Sometimes it's a leak. Not so bad. Sometimes they can be repaired. Yeah. Was it a slow aneurysm?
They weren't sure.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that would be the differential diagnosis. Is it a tumor, or is it an aneurysm? Yeah. So, remember, aneurysms. And there's a lot of detail with this. You can go on and on, different kinds of aneurysms, da-da-da-da-da. But in general, this is what we're talking about. Atherosclerosis is a primary cause. We can alter your walls and, of course, a disruption in the blood flow. Okay, what's an MI? Right. You can have chronic MIs. Did you know that? Chronic, stable vasospasmic angina or a silent myocardial ischemia. So you can have times when the vessel occludes itself or there's too much stress on it that there isn't enough oxygen going through and the heart muscle itself is deprived some oxygen. It's a chronic MI, right? Or a vasospasm angina. Right? That's a chronic situation. Okay, the old lady goes, right? Don't tell me, I can't handle the stress in my heart. Right? Yeah, it's a little MI. And then they can generally recover, the blood flow can be restored. That's normally not what we think about, is it, when we talk about an MI? We normally think about acute, right? It results from manifestations of coronary heart disease. And then what? What are the symptoms of someone with an acute MI? Yeah, left arm pain. What else are they going to present with? Chest. How's that chest going to feel? Pain, but then this is when you assess the pain. Tell me about your pain. So if you're having an MI and you say, tell me about your pain, what kind of response are you going to get? Heavy, tight, yeah, exactly. Squeezing, an elephant sitting on my chest kind of thing, but different than asthma. Okay, that's, okay, expand, all right? And then what are they going to look like? An acute MI person. What are you going to see? Yes, and why are you going to see shortness of breath? Why? Think about what's going on now. What? Right, poor circulation because the heart pumping is impaired, correct? Not enough oxygen is getting to a part of the heart, therefore the pumping is impaired. Now, these acute MIs can be major. It can take over the whole heart muscle, or it can take over just some of it, which is why people present differently. Sometimes it's, wow, the entire muscle's involved, that's it, they're dead. Other times it's just some of the muscles involved. You're getting all these symptoms. That's when we can save them, right? We can do CPR, we can keep the blood flowing. We can give them oxygen. We can keep enough oxygenated blood to keep them alive, right? Yeah. So yes, you're right. We're going to shortness of breath. So what's the lung doing when there's not enough oxygen? What are the lungs going to start doing? Yeah, compensating. You're going to breathe faster, right? You're going to be short of breath because there's not enough oxygen there. So the lungs immediately start compensating. Hopefully the lungs are strong. Let's hope they can. That's going to be a real asset. If they're not, probably not a lot of hope. Okay? So shortness of breath. Yeah, what are you going to see? How are they going to present? What do their faces look like? Pale. Pallor, right? And why is that? Lack of, right, blood circulation, but that's not necessarily why. Oxygen. You're not seeing the red blood cells are not in the face because of the lack of circulation, therefore you're seeing pallor. What's the heart that's not affected, what is it doing? So if you can get a pulse, which you may be able to, what's it going to be? fast, because the part that's pumping that's still okay is working really hard, again, to compensate for this problem. And how's the patient feeling? Terrified. Usually really scared. Yeah, and they're going to get fatigued, but usually there's so much adrenaline that they're not feeling tired yet. How about women? We all got this cool, many of us got those cool little dress, red dress pins. Did you get one of those? For Women's Heart Day? I did them. Matches my red shoes. We got those little red dress pins, all right? What was that whole day about last month? Women's heart health, right? Women's heart health. And why are we particularly turning towards women now? They can be asymptomatic, and they also, when they do have heart attacks, they often present differently than men. Okay, MI or a heart attack, right? And again, in the 60s, when all the research was done, it was done on white men. They forgot the rest of us who aren't white men. Middle-aged, if you're not a middle-aged white man, you weren't studied. Okay, now, even like in the last 10 years, we've realized that women present a little differently than men do, often in the ER with a heart attack. So a woman might present with indigestion, nausea, vomiting, upper back pain, okay, considerably different. Many women in the decades previous have been sent home from the ER, gone home and died from a heart attack because they said, oh, sweetie, it must have been that Indian food you had. Right? Huh. Right? I love Indian food. But sometimes you get indigestion from Indian food, don't you? Am I the only one that gets indigestion from all that hot? Well, yeah, but for me, my Irish culture with that hot curry, I tell you sometimes. Okay. So for me, right, it may have been the Indian food. Could have been the Mexican food, okay? No, it wasn't the corned beef and cabbage, for sure. All that salt, yeah, that's not good. And all the white bread, no. My culture has all its own problems. None of us are immune. Okay, so women are going to present a little differently, know this. And thank goodness recent research has come out to show that. Have some of you been on cardiac floors? You've seen ECGs, right? Electrocardiograms? Yeah. Okay. You can see changes with MIs, with angina. Okay. So from unstable angina, from just a little bit of problem, you can move right into a cardiac infarction. Or not. It can be chronic. So that silent angina is often progressive. Not all kinds of angina are progressive, but that silent little part can be.
So the chronic is progressive?
The chronic is progressive, yeah. Chronic angina can be progressive. So the word angina simply means a decreased oxygen supply of the heart. It's a very general term, and there are several different kinds of angina, or angina, however you want to. So we give meds for this, don't we? Some of you must have had angina as a diagnosis for your patient, or a secondary diagnosis, yeah. We give... Let me see if I can get my... I should go back to my cardio. My cardio, I'm way ahead of my notes here. That's why I don't usually use these, because I get so confused. Okay. And also I mix these all up. Yeah. Okay, we use medications that reduce the demands on the heart. So what's a primary medication we might use to reduce demands on the heart? Yeah, we can use beta blockers. Anybody use any nitrous oxide yet? Not nitrous oxide, no. Nitroglycerin, thank you. Nitroglycerin. No, not nitrous oxide, nitroglycerin. Nitroglycerin, yeah, in tabs. Or anybody given it in paste yet? Tell us about that.
Paste?
Yeah, you give it in paste?
Well, it was in
a
tube, and we had a patch, and it had, like, little measurements.
Exactly.
My patient, she had really high blood pressure, yeah. And they tried, like, three different things. I took her blood pressure so many times that day, but then the nitroglycerin drop it down to the
really fast. It's a very potent drug.
And she was prescribed like an inch, which was interesting.
Right, that's why I want to bring it up. It's an odd kind of thing. It comes in a paste, and yeah, it's prescribed by the inch. It's like a toothpaste. Was it a toothpaste tube?
Yeah.
Or was it a little...
No,
I've seen it in a toothpaste tube, and then you have this little special piece of, it's like parchment paper, right? And with measurements, so you have an inch or 2 inches or whatever. And then you slap it on them with some paper tape, and that's it. And it works very quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing. What are your personal precautions in dealing with that paste? Because what's going to happen if you touch the paste? Right. And if you have normal blood pressure, you're going to faint and end up on the floor. Okay, because you won't get enough circulation to your brain. So what it does is it quickly dilates the vessels. Okay, paste is one way to go. And yes, we give it for high blood pressure. We also give it for cases of angina. A common is little tabs, nitro tabs. You put them under your tongue. Anybody have a patient with nitro tabs? Sublingual, yeah. Yeah, that's what I wanted to know. Did you know the sequela on it? Yeah, you give one tab, and if you don't see a relief, you give a second tab, and then you're up to three. So, and what special thing did you see about those little sublingual tabs? Did you get to see them?
No.
Okay, they're kept in, anybody know? The special packaging for nitro tabs? Anybody know? They're in little amber colored bottles because they're light sensitive. So if you see a little amber colored bottle next to your GI patients, chances are that's nitro tabs. And these people that have angina generally have these little bottles, and they are not going to get very far from that bottle at all. You kick them for a walk and they have their little purse because they have their nitro bottle with them. And that's, they're like, really want them close because they can stop the symptoms of angina right away with that med, which is very cool. We give low dose aspirin, right? Why would we give 81 milligrams of aspirin, which you'll see often for cardiac patients in general? Why are we giving 81 milligrams? So don't you dare tell me it's for pain on your med sheets. 81 milligrams, what's that going to do to a 200-pound man for pain? Anything? No. Why? Yeah, use a big word. Yes, anticoagulant. Okay. No more thin blood. Okay, we're gonna use a big word. Anticoagulant. So if she thinks you're a med student, don't you dare say thin blood. Okay. You're going to give yourself away. Okay. What year are you? Anticoagulant. Okay. You got that. Because that tells us what it does, right? Thinning blood? Well, yeah. Why do we do that? Anticoagulant. Okay. I'm cutting down the ability to coagulate. Because we don't want any thrombi form. We don't want any pieces, or we don't want any thrombi to get stuck. All right? Because you have these atherosclerotic lesions. Atherosclerotic lesions can break off, can travel, can cause emboli. Get stuck in another atherosclerotic lesion, you have a block, and now you have a heart attack. All right? So we want to keep the blood flowing and clotting at a very slow time. Okay, high PT INRs. All right? This time's high. Okay, we can look at the strips for angina. I'm not going to ask anything about that. But if you happen to see it in the hospitals, it's kind of fun. Let's see, what else about angina? It's all about coronary blood flow. Right? It's all about coronary blood flow to the heart. So when people have angina, there's a defect there. Sometimes it's subtle. It's not a problem. You can easily give some nitro. We're okay. Other times it can be progressive and chronic and lead to a heart attack. So your ultimate occlusion of blood to the heart ends up in a heart attack. Now remember that we don't necessarily, during even an acute MI, all the heart may not be affected. You may have part of the heart where the tissue dies and the rest can compensate, right? So think about that. It's not necessarily an all or nothing thing. Okay, so we'll talk about that a little bit. Keep that in mind. It could be just a little part that dies off from being non-oxygenated for a while, or it can be the whole heart can go quickly, or it can just be a vascular occlusion that maybe diminishes the blood flow for a while. We can expand the vessels, and then we're fine. Okay? We can have aneurysms. All right? We can rupture. Another vessel problem. Hopefully it's all coming together here. Specific kinds of angina. Anginal pectoris is chest pain resulting from reduced coronary blood flow or ischemia. This is tightness. Radiates to the jaw. Of course you're going to get all this. Okay. Some testing. I'm not going to ask you testing. What's acute coronary syndrome? What is acute coronary syndrome? I'm getting completely off my notes. It's a condition of unstable cardiac ischemia. It may or may not cause significant injury to the myocardial tissue. Okay, so we have ischemia. Ischemia means what? Lack of oxygen through part of the heart, but maybe it's enough, not so much that there's any damage, but a deficiency, okay, in blood flow to the myocardial tissue. All right. Usually causes angina to occur. And it's acute coronary syndrome, maybe caused by a rupture, erosion of the plaque, maybe a spasm, okay, progressive obstruction, inflammation, maybe by an increased myocardial oxygen demand or a decreased supply. So what's going to cause an increased myocardial oxygen demand? It's a big word, but it's a simple thing. What's going to cause an increased demand for oxygen on the heart? It's going to cause it. Exercise. Yeah. Exercise. Why do these athletes that have undiagnosed cardiac problems die during the triathlon? All right. Increased demand on the heart. Okay. And or decreased supply of oxygen. Maybe there's a problem with the lungs. You're not breathing enough. Maybe there's a problem with oxygenation. Maybe there's a respiratory issue that then affects the heart. And we can have acute coronary syndrome. Again, a vast array of specifics, a very general diagnosis that you may see. Generally, ICU patient. More about MIs. So the extent of an acute myocardial infarction, remember, this is when the blood flow is stopped, can be limited by a swift return of blood flow. So if we can get the blood flowing again, it may be just a trans-ischemic accident. Seen that diagnosis? TIA? She had a little TIA, a little stroke, a little trans-ischemic accident. Blood flow in the heart stopped for a little while. It wasn't able to get to the brain. There was a little stroke. Then it resolved. Okay? What else? All right, let's talk about this. So, you have all these neat little waves, right? Remember, part of the heart tissue can die off and become ischemic and then virtually useless, yet the heart can remain functional. But you're going to see very odd ECG changes. Why is that? What are we looking at when we look at those rhythm strips? What are we measuring? Right. The conductivity of the heart, right? We're watching electricity go through the heart. That's what the electrodes are picking up. That's why we can tell if there's a problem. That's why you can watch the beat. So if there is an injury, you're going to see strange things on those strips. Right. What else is going on? This electrical conductivity is coming into the heart, you know, into the bundle of His, going out. You know, you learned about the path of that. what's that going to do? Is a heart still going to be able to maintain pumping rhythmically? What do you think? Maybe, maybe not, depending on where it is. So there are some things we can do for that. Okay, but know that you're going to see differences. So when you're on the cardiac floor or have a cardiac patient, take a look. Have a nurse explain it to you. It's MedSurg 3, so we're not going to get into it. But it's kind of fun to look at, that there are differences in those rhythms based on the electrical conduction into the heart. And very often, if there's been injury, you're going to see some abnormalities. And they're specific. They can pretty much state where in the heart the problem is. Acute MI, we're going to obviously relieve the chest pain, reduce some cardiovascular load, right? Prevent complications, all these things. And then there are some things we can do, invasive procedures, to get rid of the plaque, aren't we? There's the arterial little balloon pump placement. We can put stents in. Okay, we can do surgery, the Roto-Rooter kind of thing. Anybody have any heart patients yet that's had heart surgeries? Yeah. What did they have? Stents, yeah. That's, okay, procedure. Yeah, stents. And what were the stents doing? Exactly. Stents are very common. We're going to put them in, we're going to keep them open, the clot's going to be pushed back, we're going to keep the artery patent with stents. Cardiac rehab is a lot of cardiac rehab going on. Nurses need to know about cardiac rehab after people have heart attacks. Very much a part of nursing. Let's see what else. Some good diagnoses for you, cardiac patients. Here's some nice tests. Okay. The CKMB is a very interesting enzyme that's produced. We can actually look at this a day, an hour after a heart attack has happened and see if it was a heart attack. So did some of those cells stop working for a while? Or is there some permanent damage or what went on? A lot of other tests. We talked about aspirin. Fibrolytic agents. What's that? What's a fibrolytic agent? Antifibrin. What do you think? Think about that. What does that word mean? Antifibrillitic agent. What would be another word for these? Any guesses? These are clot busters. Okay? So we're going to bust up those clots with fibrillitic agents. Lytic. Okay? Going to get rid of the fibrin. All right? Fibrin goes together, makes a clot. We're going to bust it apart. It's this agent. So someone's having a clot in their heart, you might want to give them a fibrolytic agent. If they're having a stroke and their carotid artery is clogged, we know it, we can see it, there are times when we give a clot buster, a fibrolytic agent. We give aspirin, we talked about that, we give analgesics, obviously. Antidysrhythmic agents. Why would we give an antidysrhythmic? Dysrhythmic is when the rhythm isn't optimum, right? Okay, why would that be a problem with a heart attack? Let's go back to this picture. So if some of this is dead, what's happening to the pumping? It's not effective very often. So we try to restore some of that pumping ability. Sometimes we can, sometimes we can't. Okay. So we give something to hopefully get that rhythm normal. And sometimes we can't always do that. So that would be another reason for using a pacemaker, right? We use a pacemaker when the rhythms are weird. Sometimes people just have the age and they have different heart problems that impair the conductivity, therefore make the rhythms wacky. Also as a result of a heart attack. Okay. So we may do a pacemaker, implantable pacemaker, external pacemaker, or whatever, as well as the medication. So here's some testing, electrocardiograms, echocardiogram, hemodynamic testing, myocardionuclear scans, all this, you'll see all this kind of thing. Talked about women, right? What is sudden cardiac death? Yeah. Sudden cardiac death. Unexpected, abrupt, hours with its onset caused by ventricular fibrillation. Okay, the ventricle is going, and the heart stops. Okay. Before that, you may have some acute coronary syndrome or a myocardial infarction. Sudden cardiac death is when it's just fast. People die real fast. Ideally, we want to restore cardiac output and tissue with perfusion immediately if we can. If you see someone, this is when someone just all of a sudden falls down and dies. Sudden cardiac death. This is an emergency cardiac care, and that's why we all took the CPR classes and we know what to do, right? We talked a little bit about dysrhythmias, an irregular heartbeat because of electrical conduction. It's disturbed. Somehow it's disturbed. The excitability, the refractive, the conductivity, autonomicity is interrupted. Okay? So you can get tachycardia, bradycardic, and ectopic rhythms. Okay, tachy is fast, brady is slow, ectopic is all over the place. So this is when we might want to put in a pacemaker. And again, as I said, sometimes it's a result of damage to the heart itself. Other times it's damage to the electrical, it's an impaired electrical conduction and the heart doesn't beat. Okay, so in cardiac rhythm, we want to identify the arrhythmia. Make sure that the person is physically able, you know, doesn't have any other problems. If they do, we're going to treat the underlying cause. Sometimes we can use countershock. Anybody seen that, heard of that? If the rhythm is crazy, what do they do in ER? What are the paddles doing? Stopping heart and starting it again. So sometimes if there's these crazy rhythms and the heart's not working and the electrical conduction's all messed up, we stop it and start it again. Hopefully, to get it going, right? We beat it. Okay. Is there any tissue alive in there that we can, that we accept the electro, the shock, right? The transmission of electricity into the heart to make that muscle start pumping again. A defibrillator is stopping the going like this. It stops it. It's not giving them a shock as much. Well, unless it's a pacemaker. There are two different things. Right, okay. So she's going to stop it from going like this, and then she's going to... Then the pacemaker's going to kick in it, right. So she's got the... Yeah, she's got a lot of cardio problems. Well, good for her. She's hanging in there. How old is she?
74.
Oh, she's young.
She's taking care of her
grandchild.
Poor
lady. And she's the sickest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, poor lady. Okay, what else? We have medications, of course. This is what suppressed dysrhythmias. Let's see what else. Cardiac rhythm disorders. We talked about that. If they're beating too fast, beating too slow, getting the electronic pulse is wrong, if it's not being accepted correctly. Maybe a result of an MI, maybe just a result of electrical conduction. We're going to look at all these things. Sometimes we can put in new vessels, can't we? We can actually take a vessel from the leg and put it into the heart. Very cool, right? Percutaneous coronary revascularization. You're going to see it. A percutaneous transluminal coronary angioplasty, or stents, like you saw. Okay. Who saw? You saw. No, you saw stents. You saw stents. So one of you ladies over there saw stents. Okay, we can do a graft. You actually take out the plaque and put in a little piece of webbing, of fabric, a little tiny graft. Right? And we can use lasers. So there's all sorts of ways to help the heart be able to continue working, and the vascularization that is impaired to be fixed. So your grandmother, 74, with all these problems, is doing okay.
She has 4 or 5, but asymptomatic. Like, my mom's like, go to the doctor,
Is she on a lot of meds? And
some.
Does she have any of these revascularization procedures? Does she have any stents or anything?
Any of them? All I know is she's one of the first people in the United States to get a pacemaker, like with it. She's one of the experiments.
Wow.
And the saving men from their conditions. Her heart is
like. Thank you. Amazing. Amazing lady.
A couple weeks ago.
But look at this lady. I mean, here she's got all these problems, and we're treating them, aren't we? And she's maintaining. Yeah. It's hearts are great. We do really, really well with hearts. So this is where you can be encouraging. Yes, the medical practice knows a lot about cardiac. We can fix a lot of heart problems. It's great. We can do all these things and more. We've got hearts down. So given a choice, I would much rather have heart problems than cancer. Hearts, we know. It's pretty mechanical. We can fix hearts. We know what's going on. We have all these meds. We can decrease blood pressure. We can increase blood pressure. We can play with it all. We got that down, okay? If somebody seeks care. If your grandmother stays home and dies, then we have a problem. Okay, let's see. What else? More tests. Acute coronary syndrome. We talked about that. Tests for those. Meds. Obviously, we're going to give some anti-blood clotting, aspirin, heparin, right? Antiplatelet drugs. Here's some more nice nursing diagnoses for you. You can use your care plans. And it looks like you need a little break. Should we break until 10? Let's do that.